Today, lemmings running from ups to downs and back again. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is posts covering finance and private news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's market review, we're going to highlight once again the volatility in the markets. The fear gauge in the US is sitting at around 30 and still signals more uncertainty ahead. And it's worth remembering that such massive swings are being harvested by the algos and the big financial players who are able to trade on them, and which in turn help to exacerbate the moves. Such large swings are not a sign of a well-functioning market, rather a sign of how close to chaos we are. And as normal, we'll start with the US, look across to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia. Equities have been under pressure this year as the central banks have embarked on an aggressive rate hike path as they attempt to rein in stubbornly high inflation, increasing worries of a policy error that will send economies into a recession. Federal Reserve members have been very vocal this week. On Thursday, it was all about rates needing to go higher and the risks of a recession. Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker raised the inflation-fighting ante among the central bank's speakers when he admitted that the Fed is actively attempting to slow the economy in order to reduce high inflation. But on Friday, US stocks surged to close out the trading week after a report said that the US Federal Reserve will likely debate on a smaller interest rate hike in December, raising hopes that the central bank may be poised to adopt a less aggressive policy stance ahead. That is after, of course, their upcoming November meeting, which has 75 basis points written all over it. A Wall Street Journal report suggests that some federal officials had begun sounding out their desire to slow down the pace of increases soon, and how to signal plans to approve a smaller increase in December. Investors are now considering a December hike of 50 to 75 basis points. January Montgomery Scott said prior to today, sentiment was closer to a 75 to 100 basis point potential hike at the next meeting. This recalibration of expectations is what is helping stocks today. San Francisco Federal Reserve President Mary Daly echoed the sentiment and said it's time to start talking about slowing the pace of the hikes in borrowing costs and doing so to avoid sending the economy into an unforced downturn by hiking interest rates too sharply. In addition, Chicago Federal Reserve Bank President Charles Evans reiterated his stance the Fed should get policy to a bit above 4.5% by early next year and then hold it there. Still, analysts widely expect the Fed to hike by 75 basis points for the fourth straight meeting in November. You had the report and then you had some confirmation that 75 seems to be pretty baked in for November here, but perhaps there is room to slow and extend rather than front load so high and then have to peel off. You kind of ease to your 4.75 or 5% peak, said Tom Hanlon, senior investment strategist at US Bank Wealth Management. Then maybe just hold there for a while so you're getting a little bit of relief, he said. And it may make some sense to slow later because, of course, the impact of 300 basis points hiked so far are still to work through the system. But this was enough for the febrile market to surge. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 2.47% to 31,083. The S&P 500 gained 2.37% to 3,752. And the Nasdaq Composite added 2.31% to 10,859. And so for the week, the S&P 500 climbed 4.74%, the Dow gained 4.89%, and the Nasdaq rose 5.22%. As a result, the three major indices all notched their biggest weekly percentage gains in 4 months. Those renewed hopes that the Federal Reserve could slow the pace of rate hikes helped cool the surge in Treasury yields and bolstered growth sectors of the market, including tech. The 10-year was down from 4.3 to 4.219%, while the 2-year closed at 4.4830, still, of course, in recession inversion territory. This helped stocks recover from earlier losses as Snap plunged 28% after posting its slowest quarterly revenue growth in 5 years as advertisers cut spending due to inflation and geopolitical woes. Other social media stocks fell sharply, with Twitter down, and other companies that rely heavily on ad revenue, such as Meta Platforms, was down 1.16%, and Pinterest off 6.4%. Also falling after reporting quarterly earnings was American Express, which lost 1.67%, and Verizon Communications, which was down 4.46%. American Express said it built bigger provisions to prepare for potential defaults as an economic downturn looms, while Verizon's profits slid 23% and the carrier missed estimates for wireless subscriber additions. Consumer discretionary stocks were driven higher by a rise in Amazon and a rebound in Tesla following a slump a day earlier. Tesla's rebound comes even as concerns mount that the chief executive officer, Elon Musk, may be forced to sell more shares to fund the deal to buy Twitter. Musk may need to sell an additional $5 to $10 billion of Tesla stock should financing talks fail through this week, Wedgbush said in a note on Friday. Schlumberger, the oil field services firm, shot up 10.33% to help to lift the S&P 500 energy sector 2.76% higher after reporting a quarterly profit above expectations. Apple and Microsoft Corporation rose, with the latter up more than 2% ahead of earnings from big tech next week. Microsoft's cloud business Azure is likely to take on added investor attention amid concerns the weakening macroeconomic backdrop is weighing on global enterprise and cloud spending. And next week will bring earnings from names such as Twitter and Alphabet as well. Despite this recent batch of disappointing results, the third quarter earnings season so far has been better than feared, with growth expectations for S&P 500 companies of 3.1%, up from 2.8% earlier in the week, but still well below the 11.1% forecast that was mentioned back in July. Now in oil, the bulls' hopes for $100 a barrel may have to wait for now. The much-touted OPEC Plus production costs from 2 weeks ago took global crude benchmark Brent to less than $2 from triple-digit pricing, a level not seen since August. The long oil crowd has been hopeful since of recapturing the momentum from March, when Brent virtually struck $140. Bets have been heavy that December would be the month for that, when a G7 price cap on Russian oil comes into force, further squeezing global supply. Yet, a recent report showed that Russia was in a position to largely skirt the price cap, with enough tankers to ship most of its oil, despite arduous US efforts to restrict passage for such shipments in order to curb Moscow's wartime revenue. The report led to swings in both Brent and US crude's West Texas Intermediate benchmarks, as traders also pondered about the Federal Reserve's forthcoming rate hike on November the 2nd, aside from concerns about a US recession, and whether China would be open for business as usual after this, with fewer COVID lockdowns. It continues to look like oil is establishing a new range after a host of factors caused massive swings in the price, including the increasingly pessimistic global economic outlook and the huge 2 million cut to output from OPEC Plus, said Craig Ellum from Onya. London traded Brent settled up 1.32% at $93.52 a barrel, and for the week, the global crude benchmark rose 2%. New York traded WTI settled up 0.84% at $85.14 a barrel, and across the week, the US crude benchmark was also up 0.84%. Friday's action was characteristic of the volatility in oil since the OPEC Plus move back 2 weeks, that sent crude prices up as much as 70% that week, only to tumble by 7% the following week. Gold prices were on track to gain for the week, rising more than 1% on Friday as the dollar weakened amid reports of a potential debate amongst the US Federal Reserve officials about the pace of rate hikes. US gold futures settled at 1.57% to $1,661. Of course, gold is sensitive to rising interest rates, which increases the opportunity costs of holding bullion that does not pay interest. With gold hitting a low, people came in and started buying it, said Michael Mastuk, head trader at US Global Investors. The dollar index gave up early gains and slipped 0.89%, making gold less expensive for overseas investors, landing at $112.69. On the physical side, demand for gold in India picked up pace this week as some consumers bought into a retreat in domestic prices ahead of festivals. And elsewhere, silver rose 3.8% to $19.28 per ounce. Platinum gained 1.9% to $931, while palladium fell 1.8% to $2,020. European stock markets fell on Friday as rising bond yields reinforced expectations of an economic slowdown, while UK political turmoil continued. The DAX in Germany traded 0.29% lower to 12,730, while the CAC 40 in France edged 0.85% lower to 6,035. But the UK's FTSE 100 rose 0.37% to 6,969. European bond yields have climbed sharply higher, following on from US Treasury yields rising to 14-year highs on Thursday, as the prospect of further aggressive interest rate hikes from not only the Federal Reserve, but also the European Central Bank and the Bank of England soured investor sentiment. The German 10-year was at 2.4150, while the 30-year was at 2.434. Just remember that late last year, the 30-year was negative. What a change. And the Euro-US dollar was at 0.9860. The yield on the benchmark 10-year UK gilt rose to 4.0280. as the political turmoil in the UK continued with the resignation of Prime Minister Liz Truss after just 6 chaotic weeks marred by political shocks. Gilts were selling off across the curve on Friday, though, sending yields around 10 basis points higher after a report showing the scale of the hole in the UK public finances. But as I discussed yesterday, this chaos will continue for the next few days as a new leader is selected. Truss was true to her word. She moved fast and broke stuff. The pound rose to 1.1309 against the US dollar, compared with close to parity at its lows thanks to the Truss effect. And in effect, the bond market got rid of the Prime Minister, something worth reflecting on, the power of markets to topple a political leader. As for hopes that a steadier hand will guide the next government to calmer financial waters, there's a sizable storm that's unlikely to dissipate when Truss leaves. It's known as the moron risk premium. The UK Treasury might be forced to delay its long-awaited October 31 fiscal plan because of the resignation of Prime Minister Liz Truss, adding a layer of political risk to an event that's become crucial for markets and the Bank of England. Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt is still working towards delivering a statement on the 31st October, but the final decision on scheduling the statement will be a matter for Truss's successor. The current timing of Hunt's statement was picked to inform the Bank of England's next decision on November the 3rd, with the hope that the Treasury's move would soften upward pressure on interest rates, with speculation it could be 100 basis points. The UK government borrowing climbed, though, more than expected in September, underscoring the vulnerable state of the public finances, even before the hit from ongoing Prime Minister Liz Truss's disastrous financial plan. The deficit for the month was £20 billion, the Office of National Statistics said on Friday, well above the £17.5 billion that economists forecast. That left totaled in the first 6 months of the fiscal year at £72.5 billion, which, by the way, was broadly in line with forecasts from the Office for Budget Responsibility made in March. But UK retail sales slumped 1.4% on the month in September, down 6.9% on an annual basis, as consumers reined in their discretionary spending while Britain's borrowing grew by more than expected, underscoring the challenges facing the new Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt and whoever succeeds Truss. Market research firm GfK's survey showed on Friday that UK consumers remain close to the gloomiest on record, and retail stocks fell 3.2%. and led the declines. In corporate news, Adidas stock dropped over 8% as the German sporting goods maker cut its full-year outlook, citing weaker demand, and rival company Puma followed it down with a drop of 7.3%. Renault stock fell 1.9% after the French car manufacturer said that supply constraints weighed on the number of cars it sold in the third quarter. And Essilor-Luxottica stock fell 2.1%, weighed by the overall concerns about a slowing global economy, even after the luxury eyewear maker reported an 8% rise in third quarter revenues, noting a rebound in sales in the Asia-Pacific region. Deliveroo stock rose 2.7% despite the British food delivery company guiding to full-year revenue at the lower end of its range due to the squeeze on consumer budgets. There had been fears it would have to cut the range again, as it did back in July. And shares of beauty giant L'Oreal dipped 5.8% after what analysts called the debatable quality of its quarterly sales beat. Europe's Stoxx 600 share index fell on Friday as concerns grew that major global central banks would retain their aggressive stance on inflation with dismal earnings updates from a slew of companies. Still, the index logged a weekly gain of nearly 1.3%. Third quarter earnings for Stoxx 600 companies are expected to increase 28.4% from a year ago, according to estimates. Now, most Asian stock markets fell on Friday and were set to end the week lower as those hawkish signals from Federal Reserve officials drove up concerns that rising interest rates could cause a recession. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was the worst performer in the region this week, heading for a weekly loss of more than 2%. It closed at 16,211 on Friday. Technology stocks in the Hang Seng were hit especially hard by rising US Treasury yields and renewed concerns over a US blockade on semiconductor exports to China. Chinese stocks fell slightly and were also set to end the week lower, although positive signals on COVID restrictions and the hopes of stimulus measures helped to trim some losses for the week. Reports that Beijing would scale back certain COVID quarantine measures helped spur some optimism over China, even as the government reiterated its commitment to maintaining the strict zero COVID policy. Sentiment was also encouraged by the People's Bank holding interest rates at accommodative levels, along with promises of increased stimulus spending by the government. The Shanghai Composite was up 0.13% on Friday to 3,038, though it was headed for a weekly loss of around 0.6%. That's the third straight week of declines. Focus is now on the release of third quarter economic data, which was delayed indefinitely by the Chinese government. Japan's Nikkei 225 index fell 0.43% to 26,890 after data showed CPI inflation hit an 8-year high in September and pointing to more pressure on the Japanese economy. The yen also sank to its weakest level since 1990 to 147.65. India's Nifty 50 index bucked the trend, rising 0.4% to 17,576. The index was also the best performer in Asia this week, with a 2.6% rise. Gains in the Nifty 50 were spurred largely by large banks and consumer staples, with both sectors set to benefit from rising interest rates and elevated inflation levels in the country. Now, down here in Australia, fears of a global recession sapped appetite for Australian shares, but the energy sector once again offset losses. The ASX 200 dropped 0.8% to 6,680, with utilities declining the most. The index ended the week 1.2% lower. The major banks retreated, with ANZ down 1.1% to 25.55. CBA retreated 1.5% to 99.28. NAB shed 1.5% to 31.40. And Westpac fell 0.8% to 23.73. In fact, energy was the only sector in the black, up 2%, buoyed by large gains in coal miners. Whitehaven jumped 4.6% to $10.49. It completed a 10% share buyback and plans to do more. New Hope skyrocketed 7.7% to $7.42 and briefly touched a fresh record high. Its share price has more than trebled this year. Beach Energy rose 1.9% to 1.585, and Woodside rallied 2.6% to 35.47. Lithium stocks were another bright spot in the market, with Core Lithium jumping 3.4% to 1.375. Pilbara Minerals was up 2% to $5.07, and Mineral Resources was up 3.1% to $73.10. Liontown Resources gained 0.8%. to 1.855, and Late Resources rose 1% to $1.05. Allkem, however, bucked the trend with a 1.8% loss to $14.65. It earned $298 million in revenues for the quarter and noted spodumene concentrate spot prices skyrocketing to record highs on a quarter-on-quarter gain of 10% due to tight supplies of upstream lithium units. Shares in Adairs leapt 3.9% to $2 after confirming its full-year guidance. And Life360 jumped 7.3% to $6.31 after announcing a price increase in its US products. Meanwhile, Novonix dropped 3.1% to $2.21 after the ASX required the company to explain why it had not informed the market earlier about a US $150 million grant. Mining giants retreated, with Rio Tinto and BHP both down about 0.8%, and Fortescue Metals were 1% lower. Alliance Aviation leapt 3.1% to $3.35, even as the competition watchdog is moving to block future cooperation between Virgin Australia and Alliance Aviation on fly-in, fly-out services. And Event Hospitality and Entertainment jumped 3.5% to a six-week top of $14.21 after winning a financial settlement from View over CineStar's acquisition. Aussie Broadband shed 0.4% to $2.23 despite reaffirming guidance of $800 million to $840 million in revenues expected in 2023. And finally, in crypto, it's still lurking in the shadows with a 0.71% rise in Bitcoin to $19,165, while Ether was up 1.11% to $1,300. Total market capitalization is still well below the $1 trillion US, with Bitcoin making up about 40% of the mix, Ethereum 17%, Tether 7%, and others just 17%. So I'm afraid it's more of the same old, we're going up, we're going down, we're going sideways, and all determined by, of course, what the markets think the Federal Reserve and other central banks are going to do. But the truth is that rates are going to go higher because inflation is still burning hot, and even if they slow slightly from this point now, in a way the damage has been done. Remember, it takes 12 to 18 months for those interest rate hikes to percolate through into the real economy. So we are probably already facing recession, even if we don't see it today. And that could be as true in Europe and the UK as in the US, and even, maybe, in Australia. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.